This podcast is being recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay respects to elders past, present and emerging, and acknowledge their ongoing connection to land, waters and culture. Genocide and colonization are ongoing processes that continue to this day. Sovereignty was never ceded. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Hello and welcome back to AusPulse Snackpod, the podcast where we bring you bite-sized chunks of Australian politics and news with a side of delicious memes. We're also the official podcast of the AusPulse Shitposting Facebook group, so if you hear us talking about memes, which we will do, you can see them by going over to AusPulse Shitposting. My name's Noon, I'm the admin and creator of AusPulse Shitposting, and with me is my co-host.
Hey, Zach the Snack, I'm a mod in the AusPulse Shitposting group. Just before we get started, I've got a little bit of breaking news that's just come in, Noon.
Oh, yeah, what's that?
You're a huge cutie.
Oh, thanks, Zach.
You got it.
That's kind.
We also wanted to open up by thanking a couple of new patrons that signed up this week. Thank you to Leela and Michael. And also thank you to Aiden for upgrading your pledge. It means so much to us that you guys want to help support the show and keep it going. And yeah, just a little reminder that if you do want to support the show, you can sign up to our Patreon for $1 a month, and that gets you a monthly bonus episode and also access to the private Discord server where we chat extra memes and bullshit and politics and stuff. It's fun.
Totally. And we have a sort of a stretch goal for patrons. So if we get up to 50 patrons, we're going to do a little short run series on Marxist theory. And the way we're going to do that is I'm going to find some like dank and complex Marxism memes and try and explain them to Zach. So if that sounds like something you'd like to listen to, maybe hop on Patreon and sign up and you'll get that.
Yeah,
soon.
We need about 13 new patrons to reach that goal. So if you're interested, please help out. A big week in Australian politics.
It's been huge.
Yeah, so much dumb shit, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, as people who look at the news specifically for the purpose of finding dumb shit to talk about, an absolute embarrassment of riches this week.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true, though. I think we look at the news trying to find things that are actually, like, relevant or productive or meaningful, and instead there's all the dumb shit, so we talk about that. I mean, I like the dumb shit, don't get me wrong, but, like, I feel like...
Did I not say meaningful and relevant? Oh, whoops. Sorry. Slipped the tongue. We will not be talking about sports rorts this week, even though the rorts are ongoing and more
getting
and more...
Getting worse and more elaborate and more convoluted.
More rorts than we thought, as always. But yeah, like, you know, fuck it. We'll just wait for that story to play itself out for a couple more weeks before we do a bit of a wrap-up.
Done updates on it nearly every week for the last little while. So yeah. Just they're all corrupt.
Yeah, yeah. We all know that.
Yeah.
We'll just find out a bit more about it. We're also not going to talk about baboons. So just, suck it up. Let's get into our entree.
Yeah, sure. So what are we having?
So this is some leftovers from the story we talked about for 2 weeks ago, maybe, which concerns Bettina Arndt.
I'm Bettina Arndt, sick of hearing about this lady every week on the show.
Thanks for jumping in with that one, Noon.
That's all right. I'm sorry.
I gave him the eyebrows to cue him. Like, I know you want to say it, bro. I know you want to do it. you obliged.
Yeah.
Thank you. So if anybody wasn't following this story, Bettina Arndt is a men's rights activist and right-wing troll who says a whole bunch of really horrible, nasty, anti-feminist stuff, and she was awarded an Order of Australia earlier this year, and there has been some controversy around that because obviously she's horrible and a lot of people think she's not the kind of person that we should be rewarding. Our take on it is that she's actually a perfect recipient for a reward that is a colonial relic. The whole thing seems kind of stupid, and yet here we are talking about it.
Yeah. She shouldn't have got it, but also it's completely makes perfect sense that she did.
Absolutely. So what's the new development beyond just the general outrage around her getting it was that there was the horrible case last week of Hannah Clark and her children being killed or murdered by her partner and in a domestic violence incident. And we discussed last week the pretty terrible media and like public discourse response around that. We know that the conversation tends to focus around humanizing the men
murderer,
the murderer in this situation, and trying to find justifications for why he could have done it.
Yep.
And Bettina Arndt jumped in with a particularly egregious take, saying that she thought that he could have been driven too far, basically, to do this. Obviously, the implication being that there is some way in which murdering your partner and three children, or ex-partner and three children, could somehow be a justified action.
Yeah.
Real classic MRA shit. Everybody got very up in arms about this. She was denounced even by the likes of Andrew Bolt.
Yeah, which is huge. Not necessarily, like, good. I mean, like, kind of, but, like, fuck him as well. Like, I don't see how he can...
I mean,
have any integrity in, like, dismissing or being critical of her and then doing all the same shit.
He definitely doesn't. But it's like, even when the most egregious, disingenuous, horrible racists in Australian media are denouncing you because they realize that you're a bin fire, like, you know that you're in trouble. And it was taken a step further when Labor senators, I think it was led by
Penny Wong
and Keneally, in the upper house, passed a motion basically condemning Bettina Arndt's comments on this, and saying part of the motion was that her comments were, the wording was something like, not congruous with her award.
Saying she should be stripped of it.
Yeah.
And that got passed. The Liberals also voted for it, which, again, quite impressive to get the Liberals to... vote for anything complaining about sexism.
Absolutely. The only two people who voted against it were Pauline Hanson and fellow One Nation Senator Malcolm Roberts.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Of course.
Because fucking of course. And, like, this is where I think the conversation... Like, I don't think it's particularly interesting to talk about Bettina Arndt. I think that she's a troll who specifically just says the most... like, inflammatory, horrible, disgusting stuff that she possibly can in order to get media attention. I think that is just what she does. I don't think that there is... Yeah, I don't think there's anything much more interesting to talk about beyond that. But Pauline Hanson also made very similar comments in the wake of this.
Mm.
And there was a little bit of a backlash, but not a fucking Senate motion condemning her comments.
Yeah.
So obviously, I mean, Arndt is making... She makes a good scapegoat, and... part of the reason for that, I think, is misogyny. Like, we can't rule that out. She is obviously a
terrible person.
Egregious person. Mm. But, you know, just last week, Andrew Bolt himself was making absolutely awful comments about the pedophile grooming that was happening at St. Kevin's High School in Melbourne. You know, basically talking about how it wasn't that bad to groom a child because you hadn't actually touched them or done anything.
Yeah.
Just really... really, really awful stuff. Where's his Senate motion?
Yeah, and you made the point as well that there's another person who received an Order of Australia this year who is currently, like, going through the courts for sexually assaulting someone by non-consensually removing a condom. And that's a man. And that, like, presumably there's at least a reasonable degree of focus on Bettina Arndt because she's a woman, and that, like, she gets the ire of the public and not this other complete fucking creep.
Yeah. But look, I mean, she was partially sort of offered up as, like, this weird appeasement of, like, oh, we don't have enough women winning these awards, so let's give it to the most kind of, like, reactionary conservative woman that we possibly can, who's also an anti-feminist.
Yeah.
But look, I mean, she shouldn't have the award, but also the awards are dumb. And also, she is not the only person saying this horrible, egregious stuff in Australian media, and the focus on her is, I think, to a certain extent, a bit of a distraction from people who hold genuine power. I mean,
totally.
She is just... She's a right-wing commentator. She's a talking head who goes on the commercial networks, like, morning shows to say kind of horrible conservative stuff. And, like, I feel like the conservatives have kind of fucked up by... partially by giving her this award because they made her a much bigger target. Like, she's been saying this kind of horrible shit on Twitter and like in public for a long time, but it's only once the order happened that it was like, okay, now you're on enough people's radar that we literally have to, like, address your comments in Parliament.
Yep, yep.
So now she's going to be useless as a talking head, I think, to the, like, if she does get stripped of her award, which we don't know whether or not it'll happen because
it's completely independent of government and whatever. So
exactly. So it may or may not happen, but if she does get stripped of it, she'll be useless as a talking head on Channel 9 and Channel 7's fucking breakfast shows, because she's going to be totally tainted.
No, and in a year and a half from now, we're going to see her as a regular guest on Peter Credlin's Sky After Dark show.
Oh, fuck. I mean, they've got almost as big a listenership as we do.
That's true.
Look out.
Okay, I think that might be enough on that. Why don't we move on to...
It was the best of
takes.
It was the blurst of
takes.
You stupid monkey!
Yeah, and so this week we've actually got a blurst take and a blessed take. And both
from Chris's.
Yeah.
Two different
right.
Chris's.
The blurst take is from Sky News host Chris Kenny, who wrote a think piece, which I'm using that term generously, this week, saying that
nice.
Perhaps GetUp donors should form a second GetUp to keep an eye on and hold the original activist group to account.
This is after it was... Like, there was this sort of hit piece on GetUp revealing that a majority of like, money that is donated to them goes to paying staff salaries.
And like flights to events and things, which is just,
amazing for, like, liberal politicians to be trying to roast people over travel expenses.
I mean, can you imagine if the people at the IPA were paid? We would just completely immediately lose all faith in them as a public organization.
I mean, but, well, look, their entire... reason for being is to
get paid,
make that being sweet, fucking smooth, useless little pickle baby cash. They all look like they're fresh out the jar, those guys.
Pickle baby, okay, cool.
Yeah, also wet. Go on, sorry. Yeah, so that was Chris Kenny's stupid,
completely pointless blessed take. And like, what the fuck kind of suggestion is it as well? Like, form another get up,
yeah, like he's. Clearly making a joke, but also it's just so bad that you can't help but deconstruct it.
I also feel like, we had Captain GetUp. That's kind of what he was talking about, right? Like, anyway.
Why stop at two GetUps?
That's right. And so here, this is a nice lead-in to our blessed take, which is making fun of this opinion much better than either of us could. So this is from Chris Ritchie, many-time shitpost of the week winner, and... anyway, this is a little...
Friend, confidant, and member of our inner sanctum.
Yes, thank you. So, this is from Chris Ritchie. Be me. Get out of bed. Listen to Get Up News. Exit shower to find Get Up 232 is now split over a minor difference in opinion on Kronstadt. Now I'm in Get Up 726. Drive to work at the Get Up factory. Factory owned by the Get Up 50X collective now. Not allowed to work. Head home to play Vidya on my Get Up station. Latest virtual Get Up 6 DLC costs 35 Get Up dollars. Enter my credit card details to find out the conversion rate is worse for G-Bucks to 726 G-Bucks. Instead costs 70. Notification on my GetUp droid Galaxy 23. The GetLympics are cancelled due to ongoing GetUp civil war. Yeah.
That's what Chris
is. Excellent. Yeah. That's some great work.
Great shitposting. Eat shit, Chris Kenny.
Yeah.
We might move on now to our First Nations story this week. This is just a quick one. This is about the murder of an Indigenous woman named Joyce Clark in a town called Geraldton in Western Australia. We talked about this when it first happened last year, but as is often the case with police-involved shootings, to use the euphemism, there was not a lot of information out. But the new development is that a cop has been charged with her murder. So the police were called to her house by her family, who were asking for assistance for transferring her to hospital. They said that she was having difficulty at home after being recently released from jail. And the cops showed up and she ended up getting murdered. So, that's about all we have, all the information we have on this at the moment. Obviously, this is one of far too many cases just like it. But it, I suppose, is a step towards some kind of accountability in this case. And good to see that, there isn't just total impunity for police who are killing people.
We also have seen another cop be charged with the murder of an Indigenous man, Kumanjaya Walker. So I think, although obviously the ongoing murders by police of First Nations people is just disgusting and unconscionable, but it's... Yeah, as you say, a step in the right direction that there's some accountability for at least some of the people involved in those murders.
Yeah, for sure. We'll keep you updated with that as more news comes in. Now it's time for...
Fashy Australia.
I'm just so relaxed after that little intro sting. I hate the beach, but
refreshed.
I feel like I'm enjoying being on the beach after listening to that.
I hate sand.
Yeah,
it's so coarse.
The water is terrible. Anyway, yeah. So the Fashy Australia. Unsurprisingly, this story features everyone's favorite fash, Peter Dutton. This week, Mike Burgess, who's the head of ASIO, made a sort of a fairly rare public speech in which he said that ASIO is still dealing with Islamic terrorism and that that is the biggest sort of security threat to Australia at the moment. But that over the last year or two, there's been a massive increase in white supremacist neo-Nazi organizations trying to commit terror attacks, and that there are cells all over Australia of people like practicing combat skills and saluting Nazi flags and all this other bullshit. And that I think they said that they've doubled the number of arrests and leads of like far-right terrorist organizations in Australia.
Mm. So obviously the rational response to that from the government would be to crack down on far-right extremism.
Well, why don't we just hear from Peter Dutton on that point?
Let's see what he says when he's asked about why he brought up
left-wing
extremism.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't really tell the end of the story. Is that then that after this announcement, Peter Dutton made some speech being like, yes, we will crack down on left-wing terrorism, just like ASIO told us.
Yeah, so then...
And everyone kind of wondered, what the fuck?
Yeah, well, like, where did you get that from, bro? Everyone knows, obviously, that he got it from his own diseased brain. But,
yes.
This is a clip from an interview he did on RN Drive with Patricia Karvelis. And yeah, this is him responding to the question, where the fuck did you get that from? Because yeah. I heard Mike Burgess say neo-Nazis 6 times. Didn't actually hear him say leftists, so yeah, this is what he said.
Patricia, look, you can use Islamic extremist, you get in trouble for using that. You can use left-wing to describe everybody from the left to the right. You know, left-wing, right-wing, I said today I don't care where people are on the spectrum. If they pose a threat to our country, if they want to do harm to Australians, then they're in our sight. And I'm just completely blind to where people are on the spectrum, which is why I just find it such a semantic and nonsense debate.
Okay, so when you refer to left-wing terrorism, do you mean these Islamist groups?
Yes, I do, and anybody in between.
Yeah, so you heard it here. ISIS are leftists, and neo-Nazis are also leftists. Did you catch that in there in the middle? He was like, you can use left-wing to describe anyone between left and right. Peter Dutton is a left-wing terrorist.
What you need to understand, Noon, is that words don't mean things.
Right, that does make a lot of sense.
I can say whatever I want, and none of it means anything. I mean, it sounds like nonsense when he says something that is literally like, I don't believe in the meanings of words.
Yeah.
But I think that there is, like, a pretty insidious attempt here to conflate these things.
Totally.
And to, like, to erase the political intention behind terrorist activity, because obviously it's in his interest to pretend like the rise of the right is not a problem, because
support him.
Exactly.
Yeah. I feel like no one really needs to hear this, but it's just, like, so insane to suggest that Islamists, like, organizations are left-wing. And, like,
such a dumbass thing to do. And, like, while I do think that there is kind of, like, some cynical political intent here, I also think that he is genuinely kind of a dumb guy.
Totally.
And that he probably does actually think that, like, Islamist terrorists are left-wing.
I made a few snarky comments on the thread about this in the group about, like, oh, no, his logic's watertight. You know, lefties don't hate Muslims, Islamists don't hate Muslims, therefore lefties are Islamists.
I genuinely
and, like,
do
it seems
think
like that,
that
is pretty
that,
much what
I think
thinks.
It's a common line of logic that you see from, like, right-wing fuckwits on Facebook talking about, oh, these PC social justice warriors want to open the floodgates to Muslims so that we can get Sharia law in here.
Yeah.
And they just genuinely think that that's the same thing.
Yeah.
And I think there's also, this might sound reductive, but I genuinely think this is how a lot of people conceptualize politics. If I consider myself right-wing, anyone who disagrees with me is left-wing.
Yeah,
and
totally.
I think that there's a strong element of that in Peter Dutton's rhetoric as well. Like, ISIS obviously are incredibly fucking, like, morally reactionary and
totally socially conservative.
So yeah. socially fucking yeah. conservative.
And like,
but Peter Dutton himself considers them an enemy, so they can't be right wing because he's right wing.
Yeah. I also, and we don't really have the space to discuss this, but like, I'm very skeptical about the whole concept of like left and right as a useful framework for looking at political stances. And like, I feel like the, you know, the political chart meme chart has ruined a lot of people by making them think that that is a sensible way of dividing up political opinions. Yeah. And I think that this whole like left Islamism thing is just an example of that, that like when we pretend that left and right are really useful terms, then we end up having to ascribe those terms to other things like Islamism. But...
Sure. And it's a complicated issue because as Dutton has like proved here, we do need to be able to define and identify these things because what he's saying is it doesn't matter to me what anybody's intention is for committing terrorist violence. All that matters is that I stop it happening. How the fuck are you going to do that if you're not thinking about and interacting with and following and keeping tabs on the people who are most likely to do those kinds of attacks? And this isn't like an argument for fucking racial profiling or whatever.
Right, right.
This is an argument for identifying, as they have already done time and time again with... Like, you know, we see so many arrests, highly publicized arrests of people who have been in contact with IS. And like the Mike Burgess is talking about, okay, we're arresting more and more neo-Nazis. Somehow that doesn't manage to make front page news. So I mean, he seems to be calling for like we need to acknowledge where the threats actually are going to come from, because that's the only way that we're going to be able to respond to them. And Peter Dutton is basically saying, no, I'm not interested in that.
Yeah, it's,
except for the people who I personally don't like, we're going to like massively over police and over surveil that population.
It's impressive of how awful Peter Dutton is that he makes the head of literally ASIO seem like a sensible, like, progressive guy. I mean, that's not really what he feels like, but like, just compared to how Dutton treated this whole incident, head of ASIO comes off not seeming like an aggro militaristic spook dickhead.
And I mean, he gets to kind of occupy now this position of apparent like non-partisanship or like, you know, apolitical. It's like, oh no, it's for me it's just about security, right? And that's what Dutton is trying to say.
Yes.
He's trying to gesture towards for himself, basically.
Except
trying, but
he doesn't actually care about doing that. He's doing that after the fact when he's fucked up by revealing what he actually believes, which is that neo-Nazis are fine and that Muslims are left.
Well, that he has basically no understanding of like the sources of terrorist threats. So good brain, and great that he is in charge of responding to threats against the national security.
Yeah,
very cool. Also, fuck ASIO though.
Absolutely,
because they are
not apolitical.
Obviously,
their
entire existence is based on protecting the existence of the state.
Hence, so, my point that it's impressive that Peter Dutton has been so bad that the ASIO guy seems like not like that by comparison. Anyway, that's more than enough talking about Peter Dutton.
Way more than enough. Cool. This week we got a few potlucks.
Yeah,
it's a problem that we don't often have that we have to choose between multiple submissions. So thank you very much to everybody who did submit, and if you didn't get picked this week, sorry, please try again. We loved all the submissions, but we just don't have time to play them all. The one I am going to play is from our South Australia correspondent, who whose voice I'd never heard before, and turns out he's got lovely dulcet tones.
Absolutely.
To rival yours even, Noon.
Mm.
So this is from Seamus, and did I play this thing? Yeah, let's play this thing.
Potluck, where you bring the snacks.
So last week we talked about the High Court case that was being fought around the government trying to deport Indigenous people, and I attempted to get into a little bit of like constitutional history and talked about the race powers in the Constitution, and even as it was coming out of my mouth, I was like, oh, this is definitely wrong. And invited corrections, and Seamus happily, kindly obliged.
Provided, yeah.
Yeah, and is now going to provide a little bit of a correction to something that I said.
Hey, Zach and Noon. Long-time listener, first-time potlucker. I didn't really want to do this at first because I thought I can't make two corrections in a row, but then Zach explicitly invited me to make one, so here it is. The race's power goes back to Federation. It was one of the original instruments in the Constitution, and the reason it didn't include Indigenous people to begin with wasn't, as we're told now, because we're a forward-thinking progressive nation. It was actually because the eastern states, well, the eastern colonies that were to become the eastern states, wanted to ensure that they had the majority voting power in the federal government. And the way to do that was to ensure they had the most people. And the way to do that was to include the largest block of voters, potential voters, in Western Australia, which was Indigenous people. So by preventing the federal government from making laws regarding Indigenous people, they ensured that the federal government couldn't count them in their census. By not counting them in their census, they couldn't determine the electoral divisions and electoral boundaries that would effectively determine who had the most power in Canberra. So while the federal government couldn't make any laws, the states were free to do so, and the states made some incredibly, horribly racist laws, which is why in 1967 we, as a nation, voted to remove that restriction and allow the federal government to record them in the census. Perhaps most horribly is in most states before they were included under the race's power, Aboriginal people were technically considered flora and fauna of the nation. And if that isn't the most fucked up part of this whole snack potluck, then I don't know what is.
Thank you, Seamus, for that correction and extra detail. I am sure that our listeners are as shocked as I am that myself, a random white guy, swallowed some totally bullshit historical revisionism to try and paint this country as not always having been super fucking racist. So I feel kind of sheepish about that. But that is a very... It's a really interesting historical detail, nevertheless.
Yeah, it's fascinating how that was used to, like, sort of indirectly gerrymander. And, like, in Australia, it's really hard to gerrymander districts because we do it by population. So they found, like, a roundabout way to, like, force that to be gerrymandered independently. Mm. Yeah. Super cooked. Thank you, Seamus, for telling us about how cooked our country is. And if
yes,
you
never assume that Australia did a good thing.
Yeah, yeah, that's the important lesson.
Yeah.
But also, if you, dear listener, know about something and we're talking shit about it and it's completely wrong, please send in a potluck. You can record yourself talking on your phone. Take off your phone case because then you'll sound wonderful, like Seamus. And then, record a minute or less and send it into ozpolsnackpod@gmail.com.
Yeah. I mean, I just assume that most of our listeners know more about a lot of stuff than we do.
Totally. And yeah. So, yeah. No doubt. Yep.
Yeah. Please help us out and contribute if you feel like it. Now we're going to move on to Positivity
Corner. Wow. I already feel my chakras clearing.
There's some real third eye open type shit this segment.
Mm.
So we've been starting slow with the positivity corner.
Yeah. You
know, trying to bring a little thing each week that is good. And this week we've just brought an absence of a bad thing.
Yeah.
Which
is fucking great.
Still feels positive.
Yeah.
But,
don't worry, I've got some negative comments about it, so don't worry.
Oh, great.
I'll still ruin this positivity section.
Managed to bring it down.
Yeah.
Perfect. So this week, we just wanted to point out that it is good that Norwegian oil giant Equinor, who was planning to do oil drilling in the Great Australian Bight, has decided they're not going to move forward with it. They've pulled out for basically saying that, yeah, it's probably not actually going to make us very much money, and that's why we've decided not to do it. There's probably a few other factors as well. I mean, there was a really there was a strong grassroots campaign against the oil drilling on the basis of
shout
I was going to be
to my pal Sean, who was involved in that campaign.
Good yeah. job, Sean. Yeah, obviously on the grounds that it was going to be incredibly environmentally destructive, and they hadn't accounted for how they were going to protect many local threatened species.
It's also like one of the world's biggest whale breeding grounds, and like, yeah, just why don't we put a few million tons of oil out? Leaking out in there.
Yeah, like, yeah, there was the potential for spills. Like, some, if there had been a spill, it would have been the largest in human history, or one of the largest in human history, potentially. So it was like, yeah, there was a huge environmental risk. Also important to note that there was a legal challenge being brought against them by, I think it was the Wilderness Society.
Yeah.
So there was definitely a lot of, like, public pressure against it, but obviously they figured that it just wasn't worth it in the long run. So that's positive.
Totally, yes. That's really great. This isn't getting up. And they're not the first major oil giant to decide not to drill there. I think BP and Shell both have had claims that they've decided not to follow up, partly as a result of public pressure and also, no doubt, as you say, because of, like, it's not very financially viable. And here's where I'm going to bring the tone down a little bit. The reason that it's not financially viable is that what they have licenses for at the moment is for exploration drilling. So this involves drilling a relatively small number of wells fairly far apart from one another. And the idea is that by doing that, you can figure out which areas you want to actually drill intensely. Like, oh, this well's getting high pressure, we should drill near here, whatever. And the normal way that this process works is that very small companies will buy exploration licenses and do these drilling because it only costs, you know, relatively little to drill 4 or 10 wells or whatever. And then when they discover that they've got a really valuable resource, they sell that license to a big company like Equinor or BP or Shell, who then have the capital to, like, expand those exploration wells to actual production wells. Yeah. So there are a bunch of tiny companies that still have licenses in the bite. It's not clear what's going to happen with that, but I still think that, yeah, this is a huge fucking win. It's really good news that this isn't going ahead. And, like, yeah, in my experience, like, campaigning against fracking in Victoria, like, not getting worse stuff happening is a huge win.
It definitely is. Yeah. And it means, like, you know, that's one less huge project that environmentalists have to direct their energy towards.
Yeah, 100%.
We can focus on other stuff.
Yep.
And the only other thing I wanted to say about that, to also bring the tone down a little bit, was just that, like, there was absolutely no social license for this thing. It was going to be environmentally extremely fucking destructive. There were literal court cases being brought against it, and it wasn't going to be financially viable. But our government was just trying to wave it through.
Yeah, and they're still doing that. They're like, oh, this is really sad that it didn't happen.
Yeah. But it took the actual company itself to be like, nah, for the plug to get pulled. No kind of, you know, government action on this. In fact, the opposite. So, yeah, that's a little bit shit. But it's great that it's not happening. Hopefully, this is the first in a long line of dominoes of projects getting of fossil fuel projects getting the plug pulled on them. Because fuck it,
because we need to do that to survive. Yeah. Cool. Let's move on. So now we've got a
you fucked up.
Playing every sting this week.
Yeah, I think love we've it. Got I'm, every single one.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
great.
Which is so good. I'm proud of the stings. I like them.
You did a great job.
Thank you.
So this is just a real quick one. You probably remember from last week, the week before, we talked about the Otis Group, the pro coal labor faction who did a terrible job of trying to be secret.
How could you forget them with a name like Otis Group?
Yep, that's right. It really speaks to me. Anyway, this is a tweet from Hugh Remington, who is on the ABC sometime. I think he does Sunday Extra. He says, according to The Australian, it was Labor right faction convener Joel Fitzgibbon himself who emailed details of the pro-coal Labor Otis Group to a coalition staffer, thus allowing TENS Peter Van Onselen to break the story. it's just so fucking delightful.
One of the biggest chumps in Parliament.
Yeah.
Joel Fitzgibbon.
And also, as you may recall, there was the great interview with Kimberly Kitching, who was like, Peter Van Onselen's like, so is Joel Fitzgibbon the ringleader of this group? And she's like, I wouldn't describe him as a ringleader. Exactly.
The unsaid thing being that he is dumber than a fucking bag of rocks.
Yeah, which is just like fucking evidenced by this complete schmozzle. He sent it to a government staff, like on the other team, a staff member. I wonder if the staff member had a name like Kimberly Kitching or something. I don't know. Or And there's also been the theory that Joel purposefully let the Otis group leaked out.
He's on some fucking 4D chess type shit.
Totally.
This is like an expert political maneuver in order to make it public so that Albanese knows how many allies he's got.
Six. It was quite big. It was like 20 something. Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
I'm going to be honest. I don't fucking buy it.
No. It seems much more likely that it was incompetence.
I think that he's just dumb as shit and doesn't know how to use email. Happens to me sometimes at work, like you just like type the first three letters of someone's name and then it like auto completes the rest and you just hit enter.
Mm.
We've all been there.
Yeah, I once accidentally emailed like 300,000, no, not that many, 300, sorry. Send an email out to an email list and didn't hit, put it in CC, not BCC. And then about 10 minutes later, started getting angry phone calls from people being like, hey, why did you give my emails to the Greens? They've started emailing me. Yeah, so we've all been there. But Joel fucked up this week, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like a smart political... Like, if you need to get it out there, this is not a smart political play to do that.
It makes you look like an idiot, even if it was 4D chess. It looks like it...
If he's playing some kind of super long game where he's like... Wasn't your other theory that he was actually deep cover for the environmental...
Totally, yeah. It's a double cross. He's actually a fucking greenie driving a Tesla around, and he wanted to just ruin the Otis group's chance of success. So, yeah.
In which case, thanks, Joel.
5D chess. Yeah, that's right.
Thanks, Joel. Good job. Good job on the 5D chess boxing.
Yep.
Mad respect. All right, now it's time for everybody's favorite segment.
Shitpost of the week.
It's pretty much always my favorite segment.
It's a great...
I love the memes.
It's a great segment. Okay. So this week, we were blessed from on high by just some absolutely fucking incredible Bobcatter content. I don't know what there is to say about Bob other than he is consistently one of the most entertaining politicians that we have. Obviously, he is a raging homophobe and also prone to intense racism as well.
He seems like he's probably a bit violent as well. I don't know that for sure, but like just his general demeanor always strikes me as someone who's just gotten out of a fist fight.
Yeah, he's definitely got the macho country
toxic
Aussie bloke, strong toxic mask vibes. And like sometimes when he pops up in the news for saying dumb shit, you sort of squint a little bit and you're like, geez, this really
is this
looks
dementia
like creeping senility.
Yeah.
And like the fact that his son has just recently taken over the party, potentially gestures towards that as well. This
particular video, there's no senility. This is one of the most coherent and like...
This is straight up and down, Catter, start to finish. Yep. I think we should probably just play the clip.
Yeah, and before we start, I want you to know there's going to be a couple moments of silence. That's him frowning at the camera.
Oh, yeah. We'll make it clear. We haven't edited this at all. We're going to play the whole thing start to finish. No cuts. It ends where it ends. It starts where it starts. Here we go.
The most Australian of all activities is to be at the football and be eating a meat pie and a beer or a Coke. That is the essence of our Australianism. Now, to have a vegan pie... I think we've got a problem here.
it just ends with him.
You couldn't write it.
You really need to watch this, listeners at home. You if you haven't seen it, go watch
experience.
It. And when he says, be at the footy with a pie, he just picks it up in this, no one holds a pie like that. It's clearly not hot. He's got a cold pie there.
Strangest way. And when he
he's
says
kind of handling
beer,
it. And he says beer.
He picks up a little, 300ml bottle of Coke and holds it up to the camera and says, beer. Or a Coke. just to be clear, if you don't know the context for this, 4 and 20 have said that they're releasing a plant-based meat pie. So...
He's fucking outraged about it. And
well, it's the essence of our Australianness. No, what is
Australianism?
Australianism.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, look.
Also, the fucking heavy breathing of the camera person throughout. Just someone
there's
there with
so
their
many
mouth
good elements
clamped
here.
Firmly shut, breathing through their nose.
Because they don't want to accidentally inhale some vegan meat. Except he's holding a real meat pie, presumably.
And also that he, like, has this whole rant about how important it is that the contents of the pie are meat.
Yes.
But then when he gets to the end of the video and he says vegan pie, he then just can't think of a single reason why it's bad.
We've got a
problem.
A problem.
That's it. Like, yeah.
And also, I think it's pretty fucking ballsy of Bob Catter to proclaim himself arbiter of the most Australian thing and then to say that it's eating a meat pie with Coke at the footy. Like, I'm not saying that's not an Australian activity. It's reasonably Australian. But what about cricket? What about offshore detention? There's lots of Australian activities that I feel like
we're not doing service to.
We're
better
known
for a lot of things than we are for our association with Coca-Cola.
Yeah. And also, I mean, there's a Terry Pratchett book about Australia, but not really. And they always bring up meat pie floaters, meat pie in a pea soup. That's pretty Australian.
I mean,
I feel like the Coke really makes it significantly less Australian in a lot of it. Anyway.
Basically, it's hilarious and he's done a bad job, but...
Shitpost of the week doesn't go to Bob Catter for this shitpost. It goes to first-time winner John Riddle, who made a Cromulent Simpsons meme, which is Old Man Yells at Pie, and it's Bob Catter yelling at a pie. It was fucking great. We posted it on our Ozpol Snack Pod Facebook page, and it blew the fuck up. So thank you, John. You're doing the Lord's work. It's a great meme.
It's one of those memes where you just look at it and you're like, that's the perfect meme for this situation.
Yeah.
Like, the form was just, it just makes
the
so
content
much,
go
makes
together.
So much sense.
Yeah.
You look at it, you're just like, it's so intuitive.
Yeah.
You feel, oh, yeah, oh, perfect. That this is what memes were made for.
So crispy.
Yeah. An absolutely gold standard meme. Thank you very much, John.
And just by the way, for listeners, we will be doing an episode in the next little while where we eat some vegan meat pies.
As soon as it's commercially available.
Yeah. Yeah.
Popping down to the servo. I'm going to burn the fucking roof of my mouth off.
Yep.
I'm going to get sauce all over my hands.
I'd cut the top off and put tomato sauce in. It's been a while since I've had a meat pie because I'm vegetarian. So I'm looking forward to it.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I don't know about you, Noom, but a bit peckish.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Would you like a liquid refreshment to deal with that peckishness?
Probably not quite what I was after, but okay, what have you got?
We got budget Slurpees.
Amazing pun.
Yeah.
Great
job. We worked on that for a while. We're like, Slurpus?
Slurp-ups? Surplus?
Yeah. So we
decided budget Slurpees.
Yeah, everyone likes Slurpees.
Cool. It's time for a little short economics lesson with Noon.
Yeah.
Why don't you bless us?
Yeah. Well, so...
Try not to get a brain freeze. That's my only Slurpee joke.
Go on. So there's been a bunch of talk recently about how between the bushfires and coronavirus, Australia is going to have a bad economic situation and that we probably aren't going to hit the budget surplus that Josh Frydenberg has been promising.
Oh, no. That sounds really bad, Noon.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk a little bit about A, what is a budget surplus? B, why are they trying to get one? And C, why is that pretty dumb?
Yeah, the idea of government achieving surplus seems like part of the political furniture now.
Yeah.
Like, it's become emblematic of good economic management. Mm. If you're in surplus and you're doing a good job with the economy, and if you're not in surplus, well, you've fucked up the economy.
Must be
get
some
the
kind
fuck
of communist
out of parliament.
Islamist.
Yeah. But it hasn't always been the case, has it? And it actually runs contrary to a number of like economic assumptions that previous governments have operated under. So you wanted to go into a bit of detail about that?
Yes.
Who first came up? Like, when did it first start happening?
First, I just want to say what a budget surplus is. Because
right,
as you say, it is kind of part of the furniture now. It's just part of the discussion. No one questions it. What is a budget surplus? It's pretty straightforward. So when your income is bigger than your expenses, then you have a surplus, right? And so... the reason that the government thinks a surplus is important is that we've been piling up debt. We've got something like $500 billion of debt on the Australian federal government. Quite a lot of money. And so the idea behind a surplus is instead of adding to that debt, we can use that surplus to take some of it away. And the reason that that is considered important for governments to achieve is that the ratings agencies, sorry, this is all a bit obscure, but yeah, the rating agencies, so there's all of these international...
Well, I'm enjoying it. Go on.
There's three main ones. There's Moody's, Standard & Poor's, and another one.
I always thought Standard & Poor's was such a fucked up name for those people, but yeah.
Yeah. And so they give credit ratings to governments around the world. And so the better your credit rating, the top one is AAA, which is what Australia has, then international banks will loan the government money at good rates. And so that it's like, yeah, a credit rating is pretty straightforward. It's like if you have a good one, you get lower interest rates. More people are willing to lend to you, and the deals of those lending is better. So as the government deficit and also debt pile up, the ratings agencies will start to downgrade government credit ratings down from AAA to AA to A down to B, whatever. And that's going to mean that then the government has less access to money that they want to borrow to spend on, like, I don't know, removing level crossings or locking up people in offshore detention or whatever other important government services they're trying to pay for. And we saw a lot of this just sort of during and after the global financial crisis, which is kind of really where the story starts. During the global financial crisis, Australia was being led by Kevin Rudd, who's our prime minister, and he made the extremely sensible decision to pump a lot of money from the government into the economy. So people got school laptops, and there was all sorts of other money going out. And that meant that people went out and spent money, it stimulated the economy, and Australia was basically the country that was least affected by the global financial crisis, at least of like sort of developed Western nations. And that cost a lot of money, so our debt piled right up. And so when the crisis had kind of passed in 2010, Wayne Swan, the treasurer, said that he was going to deliver a budget surplus in 2012. And as you said, this was him trying to be like, Labor's good at money. That's what he was saying, is we're going to do this thing that says we're good at money. And they completely fucking failed, basically because our tax revenue declined over the next couple of years. And that is, I think, basically the reason Wayne Swan isn't in politics anymore. I think he's the head of the Labour Party's sort of like back room, if you know what I mean, but he's not in Parliament. And I think it's because he put so much of his political career on the line promising a surplus and then didn't hit it. And so, of course, then we got Tony Abbott in power with Joe Hockey as the treasurer. And they talked about the debt and deficit disaster, as you may recall. And the whole of their first budget, the 2014 budget, was designed to get the budget back in surplus. And I say the whole budget, literally that was the driving motivation of the budget. There was nothing else they were trying to achieve. They weren't trying to help anyone. They weren't trying to maintain the quality of government services. They weren't trying to make sure people could stay in work.
Well, none of that sounds like the government's responsibility.
Yeah, you're right. Stewardship of the country is completely irrelevant. The only thing the government should be doing is trying not to spend money.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm out here pulling myself up by my bootstraps. I don't know about you, Noon. I don't need a fucking handout from Mr. Hockey.
Right now. But
you've got a lot of cigars to buy and windmills to insult.
Yeah. So all of the measures that the government brought in there were deeply unpopular with the population. For example, listeners may remember the Medicare copay. There was a bunch of other shit. They scrapped a whole lot of funding for government services. There was like freeze on Newstart, the petrol tax thing, because remember, poor people don't drive.
Yes.
Yep. All sorts of stuff. And that's the budget repair levy as well, which was just like a little extra bonus tax, even though they said there'd be no new taxes. And it was basically a complete waste of everyone's time, except Joe Hockey, who then got a plum job at the US where he never has to look at numbers ever again.
What a life.
But the same thing was kind of going on overseas, and people probably remember about Greece being in a huge sort of financial shithole. And that was because the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, and the World Bank basically were like, we will only lend you money if you get into a surplus. And they kind of had no choice but to do it, and they did it, and it ruined the country, and it's still being ruined now. But
seems like a good blueprint for other countries to follow, if you ask me.
Totally, yeah.
I wonder if we did anything like that.
There's also an important difference between Greece and Australia, which is that Greece was in the Eurozone, so they didn't have any ability to print money. Because that was all done by the European Central Bank. Whereas in Australia, we have our own reserve bank that the government can be like, hey, print some more money so we have some more money. That's an oversimplification, but MMT nerds out there will love it. So,
you're really trying to start a beef with some MMT people?
Beef slash alliance. A resentful friendship, something like that. Liberals have been in government ever since then, and they've been promising, I think under Abbott, they promised a surplus the first year and every year since after that. And they have had not a single one. And Josh Frydenberg has dived headlong into this same rhetoric about the surplus, because he knows that if he can get it, he's going to be the first treasurer in over a decade to have achieved a surplus. And everyone's going to be like, oh, the Liberals, such good economic managers and whatever, whatever. As you kind of alluded to, Zach, a budget surplus is not good economic management. I'm not saying there's absolutely no purpose to it. Paying off some of the debt is not a bad option. But the idea of good economic management is to keep the economy growing, to keep people investing, to keep businesses hiring, to keep wages going up, to increase productivity. And cutting government spending does literally none of that. It's a terrible idea. It's a stupid goal that was invented by people who want to hurt the poor and needed to find some kind of like
way to justify that, to frame it in a way that's like, no, this is a responsible thing that we're doing. It's not because we want to cut services.
Yeah, yeah. And austerity, like the name austerity, I think really speaks to that, that it's like, well, yes, this isn't fun, but it's important and responsible.
You got to eat your vegetables. Well, you got to eat less.
Yeah, that's right. Of everything. Yeah, yeah. Only beef, actually. Yeah.
So the most recent kind of development is basically that the government has now been like, oh, yeah, that surplus that we said we were going to do, that we've kind of like staked our economic reputation on, we might not get that, but trust us, it's not our fault.
Yes, and which, to be fair, is kind of true. Like, they have failed to deal with the coronavirus and the bushfires, but like, I don't think the impact on the economy would have been much different if they had like responded to them more responsibly or whatever, or not much different. And in fact, it's like the economic slowdown is international. It's not just about Australia. And there's a whole lot of like really specific reasons for this. But one is, for example, there's a car parts manufacturer in northern Italy that gets its components from a Chinese factory. And so all of the companies that rely on that Italian factory for parts now can't build cars because Italy can't ship goods in from China. And so now just there's like dozens of car factories around the world that aren't making cars anymore. And so then all the people who work there aren't getting work, and all of the investment that people might have got from that aren't paying profits, and so on and so forth. So it's not just the Australian government who's fucked up. This is an international situation. But the government has basically strongly implied they're not going to do anything about it, which is, of course, their signature move, as we saw with the bushfire crisis. Doing nothing is what Scott Morrison excels at. Mm. And spending money to help people is also something they don't like doing. Mm. Spending money to help themselves, sure.
If the hand of the free market means that we just get fucked, then, oh, well, you know, it's a perfect system.
Yep.
Like, it was just our turn.
Yep. And I actually think it's a bit unfortunate that the government is probably going to get a bit of a free pass here, because the Chinese government is going to stimulate spending because they're not fucking idiots, and they're like, the structure of their government means that they can do that a bit more easily than we can here. But like, if they wanted to, the government here could do it just as well. But yeah, China is going to pump billions and billions and billions of dollars into all of their industries, and Australia is going to cash in on that because that's where we make a lot of money, is selling shit to China. So yeah, I made a few jokes on the page this week about, in the group about, you know, it's time to stash dry food and prepare for tough times or whatever. And I stand by that, but also I suspect that we're not going to have like a full kind of depression situation. I think it's going to be dealt with by responsible economic managers outside of Australia.
Lucky for us.
But we probably won't see a surplus for at least a couple more years. Yeah. One more thing. Sorry, this is kind of more going back to the like structural nature of surpluses or whatever. But the international interest rates are at record lows now. They're negative in some places. And so it's the cheapest time literally ever in human history to borrow money, for the government at least. And they should be piling on more debt to build infrastructure and to hire people and to invest in things. Build like 4 new fucking hospitals. Think how many people that would hire and how it would help with the international contagion.
That's a state issue, Noon. Again, I think you're misinterpreting the purpose of the government.
Build some more roads? Build some renewable energy generation? Invest in batteries, poles and wires? How about a discount for people putting solar on their roofs?
Not quite it either.
Tax cuts?
Yeah.
How about tax cuts?
For who though?
Well, the wealthy. They're the only ones who pay tax. So
okay, cool,
yeah,
cool. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. I think, no, well, that's finally, we've found some common ground.
Yeah, cool, cool.
Great. Glad that we could sort
end
that
on
out.
Anyway, listeners, sorry, that was a little bit of an unstructured ramble, but I hope you feel a little bit more informed about surplus slurpees and...
I know, I do.
Coronavirus money things.
Thanks, Dan.
No worries.
Thank you for listening, everybody. That's going to just about do us for this week. If you are enjoying this show, please review us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere that you listen to podcasts that you can review on. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and now, as of this week, Instagram as well, where we occasionally post poorly cropped memes.
Yeah. Also, if you like the show, maybe send it to a friend. Just like tag them in our post and be like, hey, I thought you might enjoy this show or something.
Please share us. We'd really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. As always, if you want to financially support the show, that's amazing. And you can do that over at Patreon, where for $1 a month, you can get a bonus episode, access to the Discord, and
some other cool rewards, depending if you give us more.
Yeah. Exactly. The other thing we wanted to mention before we bounce this week is that we're going to take a break next week. I am going away, so I'm not going to be around to record a new episode. What we're going to do instead is unlock one of our bonus episodes from last month, I think.
Yep.
Which is me and Noon going through the contents of Noon's Doomsday Prepper bag, which, yeah, it's a fun little half hour of us just of basically me making fun of what are ultimately Noon's quite sensible decisions. I hope you all enjoy that one, and we'll see you for a fresh episode in 2 weeks. Keep on snacking in the free world.
Crunch, crunch!